Today, on Rainbow Country, actor and burlesque performer Matthew Eldracker, plus my Big Brother Canada coverage continues. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country may use words or phrases not suitable for all audiences. No matter who you are.
Hi, this is Carol Pope.
No matter what you do.
This is City Councilor Kristen Wong Tam.
We all have a story to tell. And it starts right here on this gay radio show. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this continuing journey through Rainbow Country. Welcome to Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show that helps give voice to the LGBT community. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. Don't forget, get social, get interactive with me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. It's the best way to keep up to date with all things Rainbow Country. Who's coming up on a particular episode? Who's coming up on a particular month? That sort of thing. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. So, do you have an interesting story to share? Well, send me an email and I will have you on the show so that you can tell your story. Mark at marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, it's on Google Play Music, it's on Podomatic.com, as well as on Spotify. It's all about choices. And don't forget, everything is hooked up at my website, including the archives, which as of today will be 98 episodes at the archives. MarkTara.com, MarkTara.com. So this is episode 98. On today's show, my Big Brother Canada coverage continues with the fifth member of the jury who got evicted on last Thursday, Maddie Poplett. Plus, in my spotlight, actor and burlesque performer, Matthew Eldracker. So my friends, are you ready? Because this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with Big Brother Canada.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Gabby, you made it to the top five on Big Brother Canada 6. How does that make you feel, Maddie?
It's still very, very, very surreal. It makes me feel awesome. I am just as poor as I am when I started, which is no fun. But at the end of the day, I think that I'm going to be I'm very proud of how far I made it in this game.
Maddie, on eviction night, you made a very passionate, you made a very compelling speech during the live eviction. You're welcome. What was the message that you were getting across on your live eviction speech, Maddie?
Well, it's something that I've actually wanted to say for a few years now, I would say. I always hoped that I'd make it on here, and, you know, growing up with a full personality was really awesome, but there were times that I did feel as if, you know, people would tell me to tone it down, or that, you know, being so proud of yourself is not a good thing, and making, you know, you should hold back on who you are. And I hope that maybe at least one person watching has maybe felt like that, and maybe could see somebody on TV that, you know, has struggled with that too and has decided, no, like, you don't need to withhold those things about yourself. And I have a lot of people in my life that I love just to death, and they're so supportive of me. So to focus on the yes and not the no of the whole thing. And I really, truly feel like being proud of yourself and being sure of who you are is not a negative quality. And I hope that that came across in the speech.
So, Maddie, the night before the live eviction, you and Paris were in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And you were essentially coaching Paris, should she get to the final two for her final two questions, speeches, yes, that sort of thing. Why did you choose to do that?
Well, I know it definitely seems as if it was, you know, I've given up and here's all my information for you. I was just realistic about the circumstance. And through this game, Paris and I have helped each other with quite a few things. She definitely had more of a social kind of hub type of position. So she helped me with, you know, positioning when it came to the players in the house. And when it came down to somebody just sort of taking her down onto this is how you win this game level, I feel like she just appreciated my input. So to be able to have that conversation in the kitchen was kind of our last chance for her to be, oh my God, like, what is your opinion on this? Can I get you to, you know, get you to let me know how you feel about what I would say, and have me give, you know, give her a little bit of advice on how I felt like it would come across in the jury if she had gotten to final two. It was just kind of us helping each other out.
So, Maddie, like I mentioned, you made it to the top five on Big Brother Canada 6. What was the most challenging part of this whole experience for you, Maddie? What was the most challenging part?
What wasn't the most challenging part of it? As everybody saw all the time, I was very emotional in this house, which is not what I expected. I thought I was going to be so much colder to the whole thing. So the most challenging part was feeling like I was losing who I was as a person as the weeks went by. It was challenging separating games from personal relationships. It was very frustrating getting second place as often as I did. So there were quite a few things that made me kind of feel like I was always running up a hill. It was exhausting, but overall I'm very, you know, thankful to have gone through it, even if it wasn't always positive.
And Maddie, the flip side to that question, what was the best part of being part of Big Brother Canada 6?
I will answer the same way as I answered the last one. What wasn't the best part? I loved every minute of being in that house, even when it was, you know, a negative connotation to the whole thing. I looked around every day and went, holy crap, they have let me in, and I am here. And not only am I here, I am, you know, withstanding a lot of obstacles and, you know, outlasting so many incredible players. I was out of my league in that house. I can't believe it. So the fact that I made it to Final Five was the best part. The fact that I got to play in the comps and wear the costumes and have the conversations and talk in the diary room, all of it. I loved it so much.
Well, Maddie, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Don't forget, Big Brother Canada airs Wednesday, and the two-hour finale is on Thursday on Global. Check your local listings for air times. When I return, my spotlight on actor and burlesque performer Matthew Eldracker. Stay with me.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Joining me in studio is a performer in the traditional sense of the word. He's an actor, he's a singer, he's a dancer, a choreographer, he's a model, but he's also a burlesque performer. That's a little off the beaten path. Matthew Eldracker.
Yes. Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I am good.
Okay. So you were recently featured in a, I'm calling it a tribute music video, for the song This Is Me, that's featured in the movie called The Greatest Showman that stars Hugh Jackman.
Yes.
And this was filmed here in Toronto that features some drag performers, that sort of thing. And you're also a featured performer in it.
Yep.
How did you get involved with this particular project?
Okay. I've worked with the with Sofonda. She is the one that masterminded the whole thing.
Okay.
She went and saw the movie and then fell in love with the song. Then they put a post out. I think it was either the director or the choreographer of the piece said, we're looking for people around the world that have seen this movie. Make your own version of it. And then she was like, yes, I want to do that. And so she contacted me, like, it was, I feel like it was 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the movie came out. So it was like really quick. Mm-hmm. And she contacted me and a bunch of other amazing performers. And she was like, would you be interested in doing this thing? I listened to the music. I hadn't seen the movie yet. But the song touched me. And when I saw the music video, I was like, this is, yes, I definitely want to be a part of this. And then after doing the actual shoot, it was like everyone in it is so talented, and getting to be a part of that was inspiring. Yeah. and powerful. And after it was out, people were like, oh my God, that touched me. And it felt wonderful to do. And then I went and saw the movie and I was like, this is the song that I did the music video for. And my friend was like, I know. I was excited.
Yeah. You've also worked with a lot of Toronto's drag performers.
I have, yeah.
As doing what? Doing choreography? Dancing?
I've choreographed, I've danced, I've helped with, I've started helping with some costume ideas and concepts. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mostly dancing and choreography.
Let's talk about the art of the tease. Let's talk about burlesque. Yes. And you as, apparently you're a shy individual. Doing my research on you, it said that you were a shy person.
I am.
I guess you said that.
I am.
How does a shy person get into the world of burlesque, in particular with high society cabaret? How did you get involved with high society cabaret?
So how I got involved with high society cabaret is my friend Kelsey Wilmont. Shout out to you. Woo woo. She was doing a show with them and she said, you need to come check this out. It's right up your alley. I know you're going to love it. And I was, at the time, I had no idea what burlesque was. I was just like, I don't know. I think it's showgirls, I think. Mm-hmm. And I went and saw the show, and high society does shows where they take a cabaret, almost musical theater twist to burlesque. So mm-hmm. it's not just going and seeing the tease. It's the burlesque acts are infused into a story.
Okay.
So that really inspired me. And seeing the show, Kate Knox is an amazing choreographer and director and performer. Mm-hmm. And watching her work come to life in this show, I was like awe-inspired. And I was like, yep, I definitely want to be a part of that, whatever that was. Backtracking a bit, before hearing about the show, mm-hmm. I was like, nudity to me is never, it's never been an issue. One of my friends actually says that it's easier to get me naked than it is to get me to open up about myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So like,
are you an exhibitionist?
Kind of. I mean, yeah. Yeah, okay. I guess I would say I'm an exhibitionist, but more
or,
so...
Or a nudist.
Both. I call myself a fashionable nudist.
Okay.
Because I love being naked, but I love wearing clothes and fashion and being stylish and wearing what I want to wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely enjoy being naked. And I feel sexiest when I'm naked. So I guess that helps with mm-hmm. burlesque, definitely. But yeah, so I was very comfortable being naked and very comfortable taking my clothes off. I had been stripping before that. And so she knew that I was stripping, and she was like, well, why don't you try this? It's more of an artistic approach. It's taking the two worlds that you're already involved in and colliding them.
Right.
And yeah, so it just kind of fell into place.
So let's talk about performance. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about musicals.
Yes.
You have a love for musicals. One in particular, I think, West Side Story.
I do love West Side Story.
Why this particular musical, West Side Story? What draws you to that story?
The biggest part of West Side Story that draws me in is the strong male dance presence. I watched it as a little kid, mm-hmm. and the story's great. I mean, the story is very... And as a kid, I didn't really follow the story. I was just like, oh my God, they're so amazing. They look so cool doing what they're doing. And then as I got older, I actually paid attention to the story of it. And it's Romeo and Juliet mm-hmm. in a modern setting, which is so cool. My favorite Shakespeare. And so it has romance, it has action, it has adventure, and then there's all in like this massive dance choreography, which is, I love. And I'm a huge fan of jazz. Jazz is what got me started in dance. Okay. So anything jazz related is like, has a little place in my heart. So yeah, watching West Side Story, it's just that all of the men in that show have to be strong dancers. You just have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love
it. And cute. Yeah, it helps.
But you were also in a production of West Side Story.
I was.
With the Lower Ossington Theater?
I was, yes.
How did that go?
It went really well. I played Baby John. Pam Pam. So it was funny. So I was the oldest, outside of one guy that played Pop, the like older gentleman, I was the oldest like ensemble guy. Okay. And I was playing the youngest character.
Oh, really?
So it was the weird... Like, I was like, this is weird. I'm like... They were like, you're going to have to shave your beard off. And I was like, oh, no. But I love the character, Baby John. He's... Mm-hmm. And then I forgot there was a scene. So Baby John's character is very kind of like light and fluffy. And he's like timid almost. He's... All of the other Jets are very like... aggressive, dominant guys that like, they're like, yeah, I'm not afraid to get into the fight, I'll fight anybody. And then Baby John's like, yeah, I'll fight everybody, but I don't really, you can do it. And so like, yeah, I loved that character. But then I forgot that there was the scene after the like huge rumble scene where he becomes aggressive, and then they force him to rape Anita, and it's this huge dark moment where you see this innocent child suddenly doing this awful, awful, awful thing. And I forgot, and I was like, oh, right. I'm reading through the script, and I'm like, oh, right. Mm. I'm that character. So that took some time for me to be like,
how do you process that?
Yeah, it was, yeah. So, yeah. Especially, I'm going to open up for a second. I am a victim of rape, and so to have that and be the opposite was really kind of difficult for me. Yeah. But as an actor, you just kind of have to let it affect you, but then not let it affect you at the same time.
So I take it you auditioned for this?
I did, yes.
Did you audition for that part?
No, I was auditioning for the part of Riff.
Okay. And so they then assigned you that.
They assigned me the part of Baby John. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think it was because, like, with my, like, I have a very young face. Mm-hmm. And so if I do shave off my beard, mm-hmm. I look like I'm 12.
So did they talk about what you end up having to do later on in the story?
So we did a read through. Mm-hmm. And when we got to that part of the script, I blurted out, oh, I forgot that I have to do this. And someone was like, Are you gonna be okay to do that? And I was like, yeah. And then so we just worked on it, and it with the process, it was fine. It was fine. And it helped that the girl playing the woman mm-hmm. playing Anita was phenomenal, and she was very like, we got really close, mm-hmm. me and her. So that helped. That definitely helped. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So we talked about you as a choreographer, as a dancer, mm-hmm. As a music theater lover and performer.
Yes.
Let's talk about you as a model.
Okay.
You model for Jockstrap Central.
Yes.
What is Jockstrap Central?
So Jockstrap Central is an online underwear company. They do more than just underwear. They do everything clothing. Mm-hmm. It's more geared towards jockstraps and fetishy wear,
okay.
like sportswear. Mm-hmm. But they're wonderful. They have so the two brands that I wore were Cellblock 13, which is more of a fetish mm-hmm. style. And then I wore Raw, which is a local Toronto brand, okay. actually.
I saw that
with
a man's, you know, penis and everything.
Yep. That was me.
It wasn't you.
Oh, it wasn't mine. Oh,
but
yes, because someone else did wear it.
This beefy mm-hmm. guy, but he had his, you know, his stuff with...
Yep. It's a supporter.
Okay.
So what it does is...
But it looks like a jockstrap?
It kind of is, and then it, like, lifts and, like, places it out forward, so that way it, like, is more pronounced.
Okay.
But it also supports.
Okay.
So you're not, like, just wearing nothing and letting your dick fall all over the place.
It was very interesting.
That was the Raw line. Yes, that was Raw. And then I forgot, I also did a new line that they are the only ones that carry this in all of Canada. Mm-hmm. It's called Four Hunks Berlin. And it's jock straps, it's singlets, it's more of a sporty fetish mm-hmm. look. Very comfortable. Oh my goodness.
And you also work with Northbound Leather.
Yes, I do. Yes.
They're your leather family.
They are my leather family. Before I knew Northbound, the only leather I owned was a leather bracelet. And now I have a closet full of leather. Mm-hmm. And interesting pieces of leather. Like this, I've done it now. I've done 3 shows with them, and I've done some photo shoots and stuff with them as well. Mm-hmm. Every time I do their fashion shows, it's me being like, what leather pieces am I going to get now? And this year, I got a corset, like a full cincher. Mm-hmm. And I wear it all the time in my shows. Mm-hmm. It's not comfortable, but it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, as cinchers are. Cinchers are not beauty is pain, as they used to say. Mm. But
I saw, in regards to your leather outfits, I saw you wearing... It looked very Grecian and mm-hmm. kind of like a kilt.
Oh,
like
yes.
The leather piece that was long in front.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yes. It's unique. Mm-hmm. I'm the only person. Well, no, actually, there's one other person now because they saw it on me mm-hmm. and they were like, I need that. But I bought it. Like, I was like, after the show, I was like, so this will be mine. Mm-hmm. And then he went into the store and he was like, so I saw this model at the show wearing this thing. Mm-hmm. And he, like, pulled up a picture and they were like, yeah, that's Matt. Yeah, we can make that for you. And now they do make the top because it's 2 separate pieces.
Okay.
So it's the top is so interesting because from the front it looks like a tank top mm-hmm. almost with like, and it's like sliced leather. Mm-hmm. And then on the back it's all harness. So you kind of have like a, if you're looking at it from the back, you're like, oh, it's a harness. Interesting. But it's like a, like, off the shoulders, around the back, and then around the waist. And then from the front, it looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first look ever that I wore for Northbound. Yeah.
Nice. Well done.
Oh, my God. I loved it. And because of Northbound, they're also the ones that made me more stylized mm-hmm. in my own dressing.
Okay.
Like before I modeled for Northbound, mm-hmm. I was wearing nothing but, like, jeans and a t-shirt mm-hmm. and I was like, this is me, but then mm-hmm. I realized, no, this is not, like, I want to try different things
yeah.
and branching out and
be a little bit more fashion forward.
Yes
Leather might do that. Let's talk about you and stripping.
Okay.
You used to work on a regular basis, I guess,
yes,
as a stripper at Flash on Church.
Yes.
And now you're you've sort of evolved and you're doing special events there now.
I am.
Talk to me about what's going on at Flash on Church with you.
Okay, so I started there last February, and I enjoyed working there. It was a lot of fun. I used to have huge hang-ups about stripping, and I used to be like, oh, I don't know, people will judge me, it won't be good for me.
That's hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard to put yourself out there.
It is. It is. But again, going back to the fact that, like, me being naked isn't an issue. So
I think that, for me, I think the difference is it's different to be naked or be nude, but it's a different thing when you're out there naked and nude and making money.
I guess.
In regards to stripping.
Well, yes. My thing, so, because I've done, like, before stripping, I did nude artistic modeling, and so I've been naked making money for a while, since I was 18, 19? 19, I think? Anyways, but so with the stripping, there's this stigma, and I'm trying to break that stigma, and so now I'm just being completely open and honest. Like, my family knows that I strip. My aunts and uncles know that I strip. If my grandparents were still alive, they would know that I strip. So it's not really I'm trying to make it not this, like, taboo thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's an art form, and it should be appreciated as an art form. And that's why I like now with the burlesque stuff, I can actually have more people come to my show, and they're not like, oh, it's at a strip club. Like, it's still very similar, but yeah, so I'm trying to break that stigma a bit. So I started in February of last year, and but what I was doing was not just stripping. I was doing burlesque. Now that I know what burlesque is, I was doing burlesque at a strip club.
Okay.
But I was going full Monty. So now that I'm doing burlesque, I'm going back and I'm doing my stage name there is, well, my stage name in burlesque is Tucker. And so I'm doing the Tucker Takeover at Flash.
Okay.
And it's just Tucker comes in and he's going to put on a big show and it's going to be a spectacle. And yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting.
So how often does Tucker take over Flash?
I'm trying to make it a once a month thing. Okay. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But cool. I'm trying to make it a once a month thing.
By the way, Flash is at 463 Church Street in Toronto, downtown, in the Gay Village.
Yes.
Just so that you know, people.
Big purple building, gold Flash letters. Beautiful.
So I asked this question to a fellow performer, burlesque performer, Chris Harder.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you the same question, Matthew. What's the difference between stripping and burlesque? How do you see that?
I always love getting this question. So in my eyes, the difference between stripping and burlesque is, in stripping, the goal is to get naked. In burlesque, you're getting naked, telling me something while you're getting naked. But you're not getting completely naked. And I took a burlesque course a few months ago, and they gave this great analogy. Stripping, you're a fireman that takes off his clothes to be sexy. Burlesque, you're a fireman that's rescuing a cat from a tree, and somehow while you're rescuing that cat from the tree, your clothes are falling off. And I was like, yeah, exactly. It's like, you're like, what? But that is burlesque. Burlesque is telling kind of a story, and there's like a story arc.
Yeah.
And there's costumes, and you're actually like telling a story.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Well said. Well said, Matthew. On that note, let's take a break.
Yes.
And we'll be right back.
See you soon.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Harder, porn star, burlesque performer, and the creator of Porn to Be a Star. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara at CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country.
Matthew L. Dracker, you grew up in Windsor, Ontario.
I did.
And you studied dance for a number of years. What originally drew you to the world of dance?
Okay, I started moving when I was a fetus. My mom knew I was going to be a mover of some kind. She says this to me all the time. She's like, I knew you were going to do some type of movement-related something because you moved in me all the time. You were flipping, you were rolling, you were kicking,
wow.
You were jazz hands inside the womb. And then when I came out of my mother, not out of the closet, I was a mover. I started walking before the age of 2. I was a monkey and started climbing staircases when I wasn't supposed to. And so my parents decided, we're going to put this kid in gymnastics. We just, he is headed in that direction anyways. We're going to help him in that direction. Mm-hmm. And they thought, oh, he'll have a safe space to do gymnastics and he won't do it at home. Instead, it made me learn bigger skills. And then I started doing the bigger skills at home. And then I got accepted into the competitive program early because I was the one that was really excited about gymnastics, but my brothers and sisters also got into gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And I saw my brother go to competitive because he was of age to go to competitive. And I was like, I want to be on the competitive team, blah, blah, blah. And so they tested me early and they were like, yeah, he's strong enough and like good enough, but like, we can't put him in. He can't compete yet. He's not ready yet. Mm-hmm. So at the age of like, I think I was 4 or 5, I was already like training with the competitive kids. And I was just very excited to learn gymnastics. And I wanted to learn. Well, at first it was that I wanted to learn a front roll. And then front roll turned into front tuck. And then that turned into back tuck. And it just progressed from there.
So did you start gymnastics first and then
I did
and then that led to dance
okay. So I would watching the girls perform their floor routines. The difference between a male floor routine and a female floor routine is the female floor routines have dance elements in them. They claim
and music.
I know it feels like it's like a production and,
where's the equality,
right? I'm like right. And so I would watch the girls and I'd be like, I want to do that. Why can't my floor routine have a soundtrack to it? Right. And so then my sisters stopped doing gymnastics and started taking dance classes. And between watching the girls performing on floor and watching my sisters perform dance, I started in my living room putting together my own quote unquote dance routines, which were basically gymnastics floor routines done to music. And then that turned into me going to watch my sisters dance, and then I was dancing and one of their teachers saw me dancing and was like, where is he dancing? And my parents were like, oh, he's in gymnastics,
right.
and then they were like, well, you need to we want him for our competitive team. Can we have him audition for our competitive team? And so I went to the audition. They loved me and they were like, yep, we want him. Like I was one of 2 boys selected, and my parents couldn't afford to do both dance and gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And so at the time I stuck with gymnastics and I was doing dance, but just recreationally.
Right.
So, I started with jazz. Jazz was my very first dance class that I ever took. Very exciting. And then the second year it went jazz, ballet, and hip-hop. And then while I was at the studio, I was watching tap classes outside the window, and I would just mimic their footwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I self-taught myself. And then the teacher came out and was like, are you taking tap classes? And I was like, no. And then so they just tried me. Like, they, like, put me into a class. Mm-hmm. They were like, try it out, see if you like it. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, whatever. And in 1 week, I was in an advanced level tap class.
Nice.
So I was, I didn't start dancing. I didn't start dancing till I was 13, though. So it's, I was a gymnast from the age of 4, mm-hmm. and started dancing at 13. And then at 16, my dance career started to actually like take off, and my gymnastics wasn't really going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I was a little frustrated with my coach at the time, so I kind of dropped gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And just fully solely focused on dancing. And at that point I was doing everything. I was tap, jazz, hip-hop, lyrical, ballet, contemporary. Mm-hmm. Acro classes. I was doing like leaps and turns and partner work and loving every minute of it.
So do you find that you use elements of gymnastics in your burlesque?
100%.
Okay.
It depends on the act. For example, like if I did a Peter Pan shadow number, and he's more of a character that is, he does leaps and he does flips and he's very like, he flies through the air. So that I pulled some gymnastics elements into. But I'm doing a unicorn number where it's kind of like unicorns evolved into gay men. And so there's voguing and whacking, but there's no flipping, and I'm in heels, so no flipping. But I do incorporate gymnastics sometimes. Yeah.
Have you just mentioned dancing in heels. Yeah. Have you heard of a group called Kazaki?
Oh, yes.
You know of them.
Oh, yes.
They're a defunct music group, I guess, from Europe somewhere.
Yes.
And they had some European hits, and
yep.
Their music videos are awesome.
They are insanely amazing.
Yes. Were they an inspiration for you at all?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I found out about them, and I was like, men in heels. Didn't mm-hmm. know that was a thing.
Like, they're dancers.
Whoa.
Professional dancers.
Oh, and yeah. They are, like, doing tilts and, yeah. like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff they do, I'm like, I bow. I bow yeah. down.
They're crazy.
It's amazing. They're amazing.
Check them out online if you can.
Kazaki.
Kazaki on YouTube. Check out their music videos. Let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
And we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Nikki Ward, and like me, you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So, Matthew L. Dracker, this is Rainbow Country, and part of Rainbow Country is a little area I like to call Erotic City.
Yes.
So let's talk about the sensual world. Let's talk about sex and sexuality, but let's start with attraction.
Okay.
Matthew, what attracts you to someone?
My biggest thing that actually like draws me into someone is their eyes and their smile. Like if I see that, and it's not even a specific thing, just certain people, I see them and I see their face, and then their eyes just draw me in. I do like muscles. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Who doesn't?
Right? Like, but at the same time, I also love the female body, and I find the female body to be beautiful. And so there's no, like, people always say, oh, but you're a gay man. And I'm like, well, I technically feel that I'm bisexual, and I feel most people are bisexual, and we just kind of fall somewhere on a scale that we're like, I like men more than women, or I like women more than men, or I like both equally, or not at all. And so I classify myself as bisexual, but to make it easier, I say I'm gay because I'm like 70-30. So there have been women that I'm like interested in and would go for, but then there's more men that I'm like, I always put the analogy, if there was a man and a woman and they were both equally as attractive,
yes,
I would go to the man.
Okay.
That's
what, with a lot of bisexual people that I come across, that will always be the the analogy that I will pick you in a nightclub or a bar, you know, that sort of thing that you just described.
Exactly.
So when did this start happening for you that you realized your attraction for men? Did it start like when you were really young?
Well, I didn't realize until I was like 16.
Okay.
But looking back, I always had an attraction to men. Mm. There was always, yeah, there were teachers, there were friends, there were guys that I would see on TV. And it wasn't, when I was younger, it wasn't like a purely sexual, like it wasn't sexual because I didn't know about sex and I didn't, well, I knew about it, but I didn't, you know.
Do you think that that's what drew you to West Side Story and those dancers?
I don't know. That's an interesting thought. I've never thought about it that way. They are very attractive.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And even like Fred Astaire and all those, you know, people from back in the day, like when they were in their prime, like they're handsome,
very
fit
handsome men. Yes.
Dancing. And
I mean, definitely now when I look at like a male dancer, especially like male ballet, when I see a male ballet dancer and I see their strength and I see their poise and I see their like all around beauty, I'm just like jaw on the floor. Like, it's gorgeous.
But, Gene Kelly.
Oh, yes.
Handsome back in the day.
Right? Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I know.
Did you come out to your family?
I did come out to my family.
Did you come out to your friends?
I came out to my friends first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was prom night. Yes. Okay. I had asked out two friends, and I was thinking, we're going as friends. And the one friend apparently had it in her head that I was going on a date with her and the other one was tagging along. And I was like,
wow.
But I asked both of you at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how she got confused there. Mm-hmm. But afterwards, we had our own private after party. We didn't go to the like big bush party. We did our own private thing because we were a core group of friends and we were like, we want to have a fun night our own way. Mm-hmm. And then we started playing Truth or Dare. Me and two girls, and they were like, I just kept saying truth, truth, truth. And they were like, first it started with, have you had sex yet? And I said, yes. And then they were like, what? Oh my God, no idea. What?
You didn't tell us.
Yeah, you didn't tell us. How dare you? And then it turned into them asking me, is it someone on the swim team? And I was like, yes. And then they went through the entire list of girls. And they were like, well, that's everybody. And I was like, no. And then they were like, okay, well, let's think of years after, like, that they were in front of us or after us on the swim team. And then I'm like, no. And then the one girl was like, oh, my God, I get it now. And then she just blurted out, are you gay? And I said, yes. And then the other friend, like, freaked out, and she was saying, I thought that we were going to get married and we were going to have kids together. And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Like, she was my best friend. She was my best friend since I was like two, I think. So, yeah, I get that, like, we were really close and there was definitely we had like a connection.
Have you seen Love, Simon?
I have not seen Love, Simon yet.
See
I know.
It.
I need to see it. I know.
You'll relate.
I probably will.
You'll relate.
Okay. Things I don't know yet that I'm looking forward to knowing.
And what about your family? How did they take it?
Yeah. So my family was a little tricky. So my brother is also gay. The two boys in the family, and we're both gay. Woo-woo.
Is he younger or older?
He's older than me.
Okay.
He is 21 months older than me. We shared a room our entire lives. Mm-hmm. And
did you have any idea?
We did. So
okay.
Kind of. He started looking at porn when I was 12 and I got blamed for it. I was the younger one and I got blamed for looking at porn. But anyways, he was looking at porn and I was like, well, if I'm getting blamed for it, I'm going to look at it, see what I'm getting blamed for. And I checked it out and I was like scrolling through the history and I was like, these are all gay websites.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, okay. And then, but that's also when I started to, like, I was 12, so I was starting to realize, but I wasn't sure. I was questioning. And then at 16, I just I could tell. Like, there was more of an attraction to mm-hmm. men than there was to women.
Right.
But so he came, we were supposed to come out together. We had like this plan that we were going to be each other's support system. And then he ended up moving away to Ottawa to go to school. And so that kind of like put a damper on our plans, but we were still thinking of doing it. My sister, my older sister, didn't know that we had this plan. She tells him, you should come home one weekend and come out and I'll be your support system. I'm away at a dance convention and I come home and the first thing my mom says is, your brother's gay. And I'm like, what? But it's not the, oh my God, he's gay. It's the, what? He came out without me? Mm-hmm. And then, so I had an issue because my dad blamed me for I don't know how he thought this, but I made my brother gay. I wasn't out. I wasn't gay. So I don't know where that came from. But he was saying things like, you shared a room with him and you showed him your dick too much. And there was, yeah, like, right. Like, yes, that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But, so there was like a whole 6 month period where me and my dad, the only time we talked was when we were fighting.
Mm.
And it was very bad, very negative. It was a hard grade 12 year for me. But then after grade 12, I was chatting with guys on MSN Messenger. And this guy from Edmonton sends me a full body nude photo. And the way our office was set up was one computer. If you're sitting at the one computer, you can see the other computer's screen. So I was on the computer that my mom could see the screen, and he sends the photo, and I quickly X out of all the boxes. And my mom's like, oh, what are you doing over there? And I'm like, oh, nothing, just talking to some friends. And she's like, I want to tell you, you can tell me anything. I love you no matter what. You can tell me anything. And I didn't say anything. And then she was the one that asked me. She says, are you gay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just said yes. And then the first thing that came out of her mouth was, why do I have to have two gay sons? And talking with her later, when she says that, she meant it in the best way possible. She meant, like, she wants us to be protected, and she didn't want us to live a harder life. And so that's what her concern was. It wasn't the, oh, woe is me. It was, oh, how can I help my kids? Like, and then I didn't come up to my dad for another 2 months after that. And again, we didn't talk. We were not on good terms, really. And he was driving me to work one day. Absolute silence in the car. He breaks it by saying, why haven't you told me yet? And I'm like, what do you mean? I told you what? Like, getting defensive. And he's like, you told your mother, you told your sisters, but you haven't told me yet. Why? And I'm like, I still, in my head, I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Mm.
And he's like, I know that you're scared, but there's nothing to be scared of. I love you. I know we may have had some differences, and I'm trying to work on that personally, but I love you. And then, so I never actually said the words, I'm gay, mm-hmm. to my father. It was just kind of, he knew, mm-hmm. I don't, and yeah. And now he's like a huge advocate for mm-hmm. the gay community. I'm like, yay. Complete 180. I'm like, he went from being, because he was also, he was raised in a household where it was not okay. And like, gay was wrong, mm-hmm. and you'll go to hell, and mm-hmm. all of this stuff. And so he, in his head, he had to like change that entire outlook. Right. So I'm so proud of him for going from being that to yeah. being this person that's like a spokesperson for yeah. gay people now.
Well done. Yes. Well done, Dad.
Well done, Daddy. Yay.
How can people find out about you online?
About me online? Mm. Well, I'm on almost all of the social media. I have a Instagram account at Matt Eldracker. And I also have Twitter at Acrobat Junior. Facebook. You can look me up, Matt Eldracker. I do have a Tumblr. It's Tumblr. I'm trying to remember the way Tumblr is. I think it's Tumblr. I think it's tumblr.com/ Matt Eldracker.
Okay.
I think that's what it is.
Do you have
Matt Eldracker.tumblr.com is one of the two.
Just Google him.
Just Google me and you'll find a lot of things.
And hit images.
Yeah. Not at work. NSFW.
Do you have a website?
Not yet. I'm working on that right now.
Okay.
Yeah. In the future, hopefully soon.
Well, Matthew Eldracker, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
Hello, this is Tim Arnold, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Rainbow Country, CIUT's gay radio show, helping to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. Want to be on the show? Send me an email, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, on Podomatic.com, on Google Play Music. Google. That's such a hard word to say. Google. And on Spotify. And everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, episode 99, York Region Pride. I'll be chatting with someone from York Region Pride whose name escapes me right now. Jacob Gal. There we go. Jacob Gal. He'll be joining me next week. Don't forget, starting in June, honeys, Rainbow Country will become a 2-hour radio show. That's right, 2 hours of Gay Talk Radio Toronto style right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. That's exciting. I think it's kind of unprecedented in Southern Ontario right now. I don't think there's a gay talk radio show that, is like a 2-hour radio show where you can have an in-depth conversation from members of the LGBT community. At least I'm not aware of it. On radio. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. Who would have thought? 2 hours on radio, a gay radio show. Blows my mind. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, honey. Believe in yourself. And the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.